Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Well, it's Chris and Fish today, and that's it. No Bob. Last time we checked, I think he was saying what's up to Mickey Mouse at Disneyland.
Thought he was talking to the hippos on, like, the Safari Jungle Cruise.
Yeah, that too.
Did they eat him?
Maybe. I haven't heard from him after that. And you know how Bob is. He likes to share. He likes to talk. If we haven't heard from him, we can only assume he was eaten by a hippo. Are hippos real?
Yeah, hippos are real.
Okay. They're kind of like dinosaurs to me. Like, I've never seen them, so they can't really be
real.
Have
you never gone to the zoo?
Not really. I'm going to San Diego next week, so I'll be able to
go to the zoo. And you know, hopefully
I see a hippopotamus. Do they live in the water? No.
No, they don't.
Okay. See, when it comes to animals, you know, I'm not
they
really.
They enjoy the water, but okay. They don't live in the water.
I will learn all about hippopotamuses when I come back from San Diego. Not even JP's here yet, so it's just me and you hanging out. And it could be you as well. We're on Twitter at Chris Lewis Tweet. Myself, Fish, at the Fish KTIK, the station at KTIK 93.1 FM.
Well, I know where JP is, by the way.
Where's he at?
He's still sulking after the British Open golf fantasy draft last night, where I won, collected my nice wad of cash, and two basically have already won the British Open. Guaranteed a victory at this point.
Guaranteed. I can't make fun of you because you had Brooks Koepka before for the U.S. Open.
He ended
up winning, and I made fun of you for picking him, and turns out he was a genius pick.
You will know who my first pick was, though, this time, Chris Lewis. It was Ricky Fowler.
Ricky Fowler, I heard of him.
Yeah.
What pick did you have?
I had four this time.
Okay, that's not bad for four. Who were the first three picked?
Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy.
All right, so between Fowler, who was like the second on your list? I was going back and forth between Fowler and...
Tommy Fleetwood.
Tommy Fleetwood?
Yep, third place at the U.S. Open. He's from over there in Britain, so he knows the courses. He played on the European Tour. That's always the thing. The Americans don't play well in the British Open. A lot of wind, a lot of weather. And you would have never heard of him.
So how much research did you do to go into this? I just want to know. Was it 10 minutes,
20
minutes?
30 minutes after I got off yesterday.
Okay.
Printing out some odds, you know, running around, looking up some stats. 30 minutes. And JP did get Brooks Koepka.
He's
on the Brooks Koepka train this time.
He's trying to play catch up. What pick did JP have?
He had ninth, and we only had 10 people. So he had the second to last pick. Same spot I took Koepka last time, so there might be some magic.
The Koepka number nine man. So, all right, we'll follow that. The British Open, those odd hours. Will you be awake watching during those odd hours? It's one thing for the U.S. Open. That works with our clock. The British Open works with a completely different time schedule. So you'd have to completely adjust your life if you wanted to follow it in the same way.
No, there's a couple guys who tee off around 11. When I get into work, I'll watch that. But I'm not waking up at 5 a.m. to watch the first guys go off.
That's too bad. One of the things this week that stands out, because it's that time of year where you have a lot of the conference media days. A week from today, we'll start the long marathon shows of Jeff Caves and Bob Beeler hanging out in Las Vegas, previewing the West and the Mountain West. One of the conferences that's having their media availability, the ACC. And Coach Bobby Petrino of Louisville had an interesting comment about Lamar Jackson, basically saying that they're going to implement a little bit more pro-style plays, and like traditional play-action passes, and having Lamar Jackson under center more just so he could show off those skills for NFL talent evaluators. Because, you know, what he did last year en route to winning the Heisman, doing all these crazy plays behind the line of scrimmage, shotgun, doing a lot of running, things that work in the college game but don't seem to work as well in the pro game. Which led me to think, and you know how I feel about divisions in sports. I've said it a number of times on this show, how I don't like how we make unnecessary separations in sports, whether it's divisions, whether it's like the NL and AL having different rules of which they play by, how we split up conferences into divisions to try to balance a schedule, but it ends up becoming more imbalanced than it does balanced. And I don't like how the college game, both the basketball level and the football level, college and pro have become really completely different to the point where, yes, the best player in college football, Lamar Jackson, Louisville has to change what they do because while his system and his style of play works within the college rule structure, it doesn't work as well in the NFL rule structure. So they have to change what they do, even though it will make them a worse football team, right?
Oh, yeah.
If they implement more of the pro-style offense just for the sake of implementing a pro-style offense, that will probably make them worse in college because he was very effective with the college game, with the options, with the spread rollouts and the shotgun style. So they're just going to implement it just to show off his NFL skill set?
I think
he's not good at it.
Whoever was at ACC Media Day, the follow-up question to that comment is, so if you guys go 7-5 and he's the number one overall pick, is that a success? Because that sounds
apparently,
like what they're planning for.
Apparently. But that's what happens when your games are so different, and I don't like that. So I thought one of the things that we should do is to look at football, look at basketball, go through all the rule differences between the two, and determine what is the best one. And whatever one is the best one, we write that down, and we, in our minds, if we're the sports czars, we're going to implement it for all levels of that, at least college and pro. We're going to say that that is the ideal way, the unified rules of football. So number one, and I think this is the one that affects Lamar Jackson the most, and it affects a lot of the spread offenses and why it's a lot more effective in college football than it is in the NFL, is the hash mark situation. Right, the hash marks in college football spread out a lot farther. They're 40 feet apart. NFL, a lot more narrow, 18.8 feet apart. In fact, when the Hall of Fame game happens in Canton, you can really see the drastic difference on the yard lines because they have like the high school, the college, and the NFL hash marks, and you could really see how different they are at all these different levels of football. So if we're going to pick between college, 40 feet apart. The NFL, 18.8 feet apart. What is the better system? What is the more enjoyable thing for you to watch?
Oh, it's college. It's 40 feet apart. And the biggest thing that gets me is not had to do with Lamar Jackson. This just comes down to me to field goal kicking. There's nothing more exciting, at least when it comes to field goal kicking, than watching a kicker kick from like the 2 yard line when he has to basically hit the ball almost horizontally because he's so far over in college. And in the pros, it's like, oh, this is a chip shot field goal. The hash marks aren't even bigger than the uprights. Which always seemed backwards to me. Shouldn't the pro kickers be the ones challenged to kick these horizontal field goals as opposed to just straight? So I think, to me, that was the biggest thing that came down to. I want to see more fun. All right, it's fourth and goal at the two. Our kicker's got to kick this at like a 45-degree angle, or we could just go for two. Or go for the touchdown. That's what I like to see. That's why I think we need college hash marks across the game. Challenge the kickers. Field goals are getting too easy.
So you went with the kicking angle of this. That's not the fun. We talk about kickers all you want.
You tell me you don't like watching kickers kick at a 45-degree angle?
There's plenty of differences in the kicking games that we'll get to when we look at the different rules between college and the NFL. I look at the hash marks exclusively from an offense standpoint and like how you can have a 3-receiver set on the wide side of the field in college, and it feels like there is boatloads of space on that side for those 3 receivers. And in the NFL, it's just a little bit more of a compact space. And I like the fact that the open areas, I think, create the ability to have different offenses, not everything being unified, to where you can have a spread, you can have the option offenses, and you can have a traditional offense, and it all fits within the structure of the rules. And I think the variety is what I love about college football, is that not every offense, especially the Mountain West over the last 5 years, it's been one of the conferences that's highlighted this, that there is not one style of play that you, or one style of offense that you have to run because the rule structure basically limits the creativity that you can have. So I'm with you, but for different reasons, that the hash marks being 40 feet apart is the best way to do it. Which I mentioned there was going to be more kicking, extra point. That's been one of the things recently that the NFL has changed. Now from the 15-yard line, college still at the 2. So a lot easier extra points in college. NFL's more of an adventure. If you had to pick one or the other, which one you going with?
Well, I just talked about the hash marks making it harder on kickers. NFL got it right. 15-yard line. There's no fun in having a point after touchdown being automatic, and it makes the decision more exciting. Well, if my kicker can't make a 33-yard field goal, should I go for 2 every time? So you got to go from the 15-yard line. Once again, I'm all about challenging all the positions. Kickers shouldn't have it easy just because, you know, they might be the least athletic player on the field.
Yeah, but college kickers are supposed to be worse, right? And
yeah.
And there are some teams, and a couple of them have come to the blue recently, where, well, you got to know that if they're not inside the 10-yard line, they might not be able to kick a field goal. At least there's going to be an adventure by it. But I am still with you that I don't like automatics. Right, like I do like the NFL change. It did create a little bit more excitement of, okay, I can't just tune out the extra point. And in college, the percentages aren't the same from the 2-yard line as they were in the NFL. There was a couple of percentage points lower of the success rate. But still, if you had the adventure of the 15-yard line in college, I think it would create more banana situations. And yeah. I love college football for the banana situations that you can have. So extra point to 15-yard line, we're in agreement, two for two.
And Tampa Bay would be very excited because I think it would have proven that Roberto Aguayo is not a good kicker.
Yeah.
We just saved Tampa Bay a second-round draft pick with this change.
Still can't get over that. That's my one negative for my Tampa Bay Super Bowl pick, is that they still have Aguayo right now as their kicker. All right, we'll get one more in for the differences and trying to unify the rules between college and the NFL. The pass interference rule. This is one that I get frustrated on one side because I'm really passionate on the fact that pass interference needs to be a spot foul. And the difference in, of course, college, 15 yards max, even if the penalty was 40 yards down the field on the pass interference, the ball still only moves up 15 yards. In the NFL, it's a spot foul. If you commit the pass interference 40 yards down the field, you get the ball 40 yards down the field. I think that's the best way to do it because defenses could just get to the point in college where the smart play is to just strip the receiver if you got beat on a deep route, because 15 yards is a lot better than giving up a touchdown, and I don't think we should reward penalizing. So I am going with the NFL rule of spot foul.
See, this is where I'm torn. I want to go college because I hate watching teams advance down the field with penalties, which also sort of tie us in would be defensive holding, how in the NFL it's always an automatic first down. Mm-hmm. But in college, it's just 10 yards. And if it's 4th and 40, it's now 4th and 30. So if we could enforce it tighter and say, all right, you know, we're going to call more pass interferences, or we're not going to call as many, and it's not going to always be 40 yards down the field, I think that would be great. But I don't want to turn the game into, oh, I got beat on a deep route, let me throw my foot out there, and it's a 15-yard penalty. So for the sake of the game, you're right, Chris mm-hmm. Lewis, we've got to always keep it as a spot foul. Otherwise, it just... it would be atrocious to watch.
Yeah, we got to protect the deep plays. That's the exciting part about football sometimes, is watching the 40-yard play. And Cedric Wilson catching those 40-yard passes over the head of the defense. That's what was, to me, my favorite part about watching Boise State football last year. So got to protect that. Can't let people just shove Cedric Wilson if they beat him.
Exactly.
If he beats him deep down the field.
That would have been a perfect opportunity for Grayson Allen to become an NFL corner. Just boom, throw the leg out. You're an NFL corner. It's only 15 yards, Grayson.
We found it. Forget his senior year at Duke. Yeah. He needs to play his senior year for Duke football.
Exactly. Just start tripping people.
There you go. Greg Paulus, right? He's another one of those guys at Duke. Yeah, just a little bit of football, a little bit of basketball.
Throw the leg out there.
Call 424-9300 right now. Be the ninth caller to win a gift card from Beef O'Brady's. Get to Beef O'Brady's on the northwest corner of Overland and Eagle to score a lunch or dinner. Beef's for business lunches, sports watch parties, or friends and family. An award-winning menu, huge video wall, big screen TVs await. And, of course, it's JP approved. You just stepped into the studio as well. Beef O'Brady's in Meridian, good food and good sports. Still got more football to do. Differences between the two rules, structure and college and pro. We're trying to unify it to get the best game at both levels. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. It's Fish and Chris with No Bob on Idaho Sports Talk. I believe Bob will be back tomorrow so we can learn all about him seeing the hippopotamus or the Jungle Cruise, whatever they try to set up there at Disneyland. By the way, I had a tweet. We were talking about whether hippopotamuses live in the water or not.
Yeah.
And you said they didn't live in the water?
I don't believe they do.
Okay, well, we got a tweet from Nostradamus, or Nostradamrus, is the right way to say it. When they're in the water and not dead, they do, in fact, live in the water. And that is accurate. Because if they go into the water and they don't die right away, they are alive and in the water at the same time. Thus, they are living in the water. He's right.
On a technicality,
and I'm right, too. Although I didn't even pick a side. I was just confused. These don't look real.
You don't think
these are like dinosaurs to me. I don't think dinosaurs are real because I just can't picture. I can't envision dinosaurs like actually existing in the space. I can't imagine myself rolling up on a hippopotamus.
Well, they're in the desert. I don't think you're just going to roll up.
That's the city in me. That's the East Coast coming back. I don't think we got hippopotamuses in the East Coast. I don't think we got hippopotamuses out here either. All right, so we're trying to unify football, right? Because I don't like the fact that we have a completely different rule structure in college football and in the NFL. I mean, to the point where Louisville and Bobby Petrino said at ACC Media Days that he has to put in a scheme of pro packages for Lamar Jackson just to show it off to NFL people. Like, not because he thinks it'll make Louisville a better team. He says, like, he needs to show off Lamar Jackson's NFL skills because the NFL game is so different than the college game. Now, you get it. Like, part of it is because the athletes in the NFL are just better, higher level. So there's some of the things that you can do in college that won't work just because the quality of competition's higher. But there are some of the things that rules influence as well. Part of it, the hash marks, and we discussed that. I think the fact that the college hash marks 40 feet apart, I like the experience of that. I think it opens up more plays, different styles of offenses, more variety. And that's kind of why I want to sit down on my couch on a Saturday from, well, back East Coast time, 12 to 12, and be able to watch a gajillion games and not feel like I'm seeing the same thing on every channel, because there are so many different offenses that it adds its own little personality to it. We've also discussed the extra points. We both prefer the pro extra point. The pass interference rules, the spot foul versus the 15 yards max, and to protect the integrity of the deep ball, I think it has to be a spot foul, because I don't want people just, beat, push, trip, Grayson Allen up in here, and now we're not getting to see our deep passes, and at most it's a 15-yard penalty in college, so 40 yards down the field doesn't matter, 15 yards up, and that's it. More rule differences, and back to the receiving angle of it. Of course, in college, you only need to get 1 foot down to have it a catch. NFL, 2 feet in to call it a catch. Which is the better way to go about it?
2 feet in.
2 feet
in. You're the best players in the world. You can get 2 feet in. Though I will expand this, Chris Lewis. When it comes to possession of the ball, college has it right, which is basically if the ball's in your hands and you caught it, you're good. We don't need a football move. I don't know what that means. Did Dez catch it? So you need 2 feet inbounds. NFL, you got that right. But when it comes to possession of the ball, if I come to the ground and the ball's in my hand, that's a catch. I don't care if I didn't make a football move or not.
What is the NFL rule structure at this point for what is a catch? And then they try to get rid of football move, and then they try to
You still have to make some kind of move. You can't just fall to the ground with the ball.
It's strange. I don't know what a catch is in the NFL, to the point where it's confused me in college, who I don't know what a catch is. But can I talk you into 1 foot?
All right, try.
Because are you in the game to see incomplete passes, or are you watching the game to see crazy complete passes? Like, if somebody makes a spectacular catch and gets 1 foot in, like, I still think it's cool that he made the catch and got 1 foot in. Like, I'm in it to see the ball move. I'm in it, not to say I hate defense or I don't like a defensive struggle every now and then, but if you're able to make, like, an Odell Beckham-type catch and get 1 foot in bounds, I still think that was pretty impressive and it should count. Like, in college, the game isn't killed. Like, when I saw, I guess it was Spurbeck made a spectacular catch by the sidelines. He actually got both feet in that one time. But if he got one in, it's not like I want that catch to not count because he only got 1 foot in, even though he made a spectacular effort to catch the ball while being in bounds with some part of his body. So you only need to get the tip of the ball into the end zone for it to be a touchdown. So why do you need to get both feet in bounds for it to be a catch?
One answer for that. I don't want to see the goal line fade become a thing. Because if you only have to get 1 foot inbound, I'm just throwing a fade route every single time. Because it's like, oh, foot inbounds, catch the ball. 2 feet inbounds is the biggest detriment against the fade. You know how many times in the NFL you see a team run a fade and it's like, oh, he got 1 foot in, but he didn't get 2 feet in. I don't want to see the goal line fade every play. All right, we're on the one, goal line fade. All right, we didn't get it, do it again. You got to keep to it, Chris. These are the best athletes in the world.
Yeah, but we're unifying it, so it's going to be in college too.
Well, train them.
Okay, I'm with you. I can be taught. I tried to talk you into it. I was initially with 1 foot, but you're right. 2 feet. Make it a challenge.
Unless you love the goal line
fade. We're not giving you gifts. We're not giving you gifts. You got to get 2 feet in. So you're going pro. You've convinced me. Clock behavior after a first down. Now, this really gets into play on these comeback attempts, the two-minute drill, where if you get a first down in college, the clock stops enough for you to, you know, reset the chains and get the, you know, guys back to the line of scrimmage, and you can spike it then if you want, or you can try to run another quick play. NFL, you get the first down, the clock still winds regardless unless you got out of bounds. Where do you sit on this one?
Clock needs to keep running. I'm with the pro one, because I think if we get to the point where the clock stops, we're going to see like a commercial. Like, all right, the clock has stopped on the 40-yard completion. Here's a 30-second ad from T-Mobile. No, I don't want to see that at all. It's clunky to me. It's clunky where the clock stops and everyone's running to the line of scrimmage. I want to see these offensive linemen hustling, knowing they're wasting precious time, as opposed to, all right, as long as I'm faster than these chain gang guys who are 52, we'll be fine.
It does have a stoppage time element to it, doesn't it? Where, you know, you're not sure like when the clock's going to start winding again, just like a stoppage time. You don't know when the game's going to end in soccer. It's just blow the whistle. Okay, the game's over now. I was like, wait a minute. We need the clock count down until it actually hits zero. When it hits zero, okay, then the game's over. But I love what it does to the 2-minute drill, though. It maybe makes it easier, but it makes it more exciting. And I feel like even if there's only 40 seconds left and you're back at your own 20, you do have a chance if you have no timeouts. And the longer both teams have a chance to win the game, I think the better it is for the sport itself. So I'm going with the college structure, and I hope I convinced you to go on my side this time.
You did. You did. I want to see more comeback. But if as soon as the first time that someone completes a 40-yard pass and I have to watch a commercial, Chris Lewis, while the chains reset, then I'm going back.
You don't have to do that yet. But which moves to the next one, the 2-minute warning, which they have it in the NFL, do not have it in college. I just want to get rid of it. I hate the 2-minute warning. Why do we need another break to get more commercials in as if the teams don't have timeouts? The 2-minute warning, silly. I don't like it at all.
See, I was with the 2-minute warning, but now that I've caught the clock stopping on every first down, we can get rid of the 2-minute warning.
Okay, cool. So 2-minute warning is scratched. So we're getting a little bit of more of a college feel and unifying the rules of football. And now one of the more controversial rules is the overtime. I don't know if there's any bigger difference between the two rule structures than what happens at the end of regulation in a tie game. NFL still has a semi-sudden death where, okay, if you get the ball first and get a field goal, you don't automatically win. The other team has a chance to match it. But the college, you know how it is, 25-yard line, basically the inning structure to it. And you keep on going. Eventually, you have to go for two after the second overtime if you're still tied. I hate the college overtime just because it messes up my stats.
No.
Mainly because
stats.
Of the stats.
No.
You can't, the quarterbacks would have break the touchdown record by throwing 9 touchdowns in a game, and 4 of them came in overtime. That's not how we should do this. If you tell me the stats don't count, I'd be more willing to go to your side. But it doesn't feel like football. When you are given the ball at the 25-yard line, you're basically in the red zone automatically. It eliminates like 90% of the game. The NFL current structure, while it might not be perfect, you're still getting the fundamental parts about the game. You're still getting special teams kickoffs. You're still getting at least the first one. And while you might be frustrated if your team gives up a touchdown in the first one, that's part of it. You can't let a team drive down the field and get a touchdown on the first drive and expect to still win the game. So I'm with the NFL rule, especially when I compare it to college. I don't think the NFL rule is perfect, but it's a lot better than the college one.
No, you're wrong, unfortunately, Chris. There's two reasons. One, you talk about stats being messed up. Yes. Here's a stat that gets messed up in the NFL with their overtime. It's that third category in most standings. That should be a zero all the time.
Why are you a tie hater?
Because you play to win the game, Chris Lewis. You don't play to tie. And it's really weird when it comes to playoff time, just like last year. Well, the Redskins are 8-6-1 going into the last week, and so that means their winning percentage is better than the team that's 8-7. So the team that's 8-7, should they tie?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to losing? I never want a team to play for a tie. And two, talk about removing the fundamental parts of the game. If you're on defense in the NFL, you could lose a chance to play offense, which is a fundamental part of the game, thanks to a coin. I don't need a coin determining my game, and I don't need ties in my standings.
Imagine trying to figure out the rankings if teams had ties in college football.
It'd be terrible.
Like, imagine trying to come up with, like, is Alabama still a playoff team after their tie to LSU? Like, that would be crazy. I think that'd be really fun.
No, it wouldn't.
We're trying
to
evaluate what a tie is.
Also, can you imagine watching Alabama LSU overtime? All right, well, that's a 3-and-out. They're going to punt it. And LSU, they just won 3-and-out. Let's watch them punt it back. See, at least in the SEC, teams have a chance to score from the 25-yard line.
Mm.
So I'm sorry, Chris, you can't have ties and you can't have coins determining your
game. I
think
you're more passionate about this than me, so that's why I'm going to go with you on this, that the college system, although I just disagree with it. All right, we have to go fast on the next three, so we're just going to say college or pro.
Okay.
Replay system, challenge system versus all plays reviewed.
Pros.
Pros. Yeah, cause all plays reviewed. These things take forever.
No, I don't need 4-hour games.
College game, every play is under review and you can't stand it. Down by contact. Pro, you need to be touched. College, as soon as you hit the ground, you're dead.
Pro, let Lamar Jackson have a chance to stand up if the center can't snap the ball to him.
Yeah, I would go pro too, because Like, sometimes if you trip over your feet, it's not like the defense did anything to make you trip.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the defense should have get credit for you tripping. If you run a route and you're wide open, but you have to dive to make the catch, if the defense not around you, the defense doesn't get credit for making a stop. So I'm with you there. You wrote down possession after a missed kick.
So I didn't know this was a thing. Real quick, so in college, if someone misses a field goal, you get the ball at the line of scrimmage or the 20-yard line, whichever one's closer. In the pros, it's where the ball was kicked from.
I'll let you have this. I don't think this affects that much.
You need it. Well, you need it for the pros. That's where the ball was missed from, not where you snapped the ball.
All right. I'll let you go with that. I don't have a big
I didn't even know there was
a
difference, but I mean, you got if I miss a kick from the 50, you get the ball at the 50.
All right. So there we go. We have a good balance between it. We'll recap the college versus pro and exactly what will be the unified version of our favorite game of football. KTIK, proud sponsor of Finals Night, Saturday, July 22nd at the Snake River Stampede at the Ford Idaho Center in Nampa. Tickets on sale now at ictickets.com. Get more information at snakeriverstampede.com. Up next, it's a sports update, including more preseason watch lists. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
This Ticket Sports Update brought to you by the Owyhee Tavern. Make your next dinner occasion in downtown Boise at the newest urban-inspired spot in town, the Owyhee Tavern Steak and Sea at 11th and Main. Another day, another watch list for a couple of Boise State football players. Quarterback Brett Rippon named to the Werfel Award watch list. That award is for the outstanding community service and academic excellence. Wide receiver Cedric Wilson's, no surprise here really, named to the Biletnikoff Award watch list. That's given to the nation's top receiver.
Well, yesterday you guys gave your predictions. I think Cedric Wilson goes for 1,500 yards this year, but I think he only gets 9 touchdowns.
Touchdowns going to be down. Why?
I think teams are going to double-team in the red zone. They're going to force Rippon to get the ball to him elsewhere when they're inside the 20. But when you're between the 20s, you can't stand with Cedric Wilson, especially some of these Mountain West defenses. They're just outmatched.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be fun to see. I hope at least it's fun because that would mean he's producing. But it's a completely different structure of him being the only proven guy other than Jake Rowe, if you want to say Jake count out last year because he was hurt. I mean, he was proven back beyond last season. But in the receiving core, it's Cedric Wilson, and then it's a mystery. And I still think that'll yield a bunch of targets and close to 1,500 yards like you brought up. And I think he'll get the touchdowns to go along with it because Boise State scores a lot of touchdowns. And if you have to divide up, Brett Rippon's going to throw, 30-something touchdowns divided up. Wilson might have, you say, at least a third, might be half.
Somebody's going to emerge, don't you think? I mean, you can't just have one target or one tight end, one wide receiver. Somebody will emerge, which will, I think, eventually open things up for a little bit more for Wilson as the season goes along.
I think the fun part is figuring out who that someone will be.
Yes. Well, the super fight between Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather just over a month away. And Conor McGregor has promised to knock out a Mayweather by the fourth round. But an interesting twist here. Boxer Jesse Vargas told Villainfy Media that McGregor was knocked out cold sparring with MMA star Bradley Wheeler. Floyd Mayweather, though, isn't buying it. He says, me and Jesse Vargas are in communication. Everything is rumors. Until I see it, I have to see it with my own eyes.
I want to believe this. This would make the fight even better to watch.
What? That McGregor's so bad that he got knocked out by a sparring partner. Now you want to see him fight a boxer who's never lost?
Well, now he gets a month to prove that. What if he, you know, this ends up being true and then he goes 12 rounds with him? Then he's the greatest ever.
Yeah, this isn't going to be a fight. Like, that's the whole thing is why this promotion has gotten out of control already. I mean, all they have to sell is trash talk and race, and that's what they have here. They don't have a fight, right? Like, who's watching this just to see, oh, this could be an epic fight? They don't have that part. They don't have a fight to promote here. Mayweather-Pacquiao, at least they had a fight to promote. Like, you were looking forward to seeing what would happen when those two got into the ring. Nobody really thinks that this is going to be a fight, so you have to play up all the other stuff, and that can be dangerous because nobody... Well, there's people out there who cape for McGregor. I'm not one of them. Some of the talking that he does, I think, goes over the line, but that's the fight game, and that's what you have to do to sell it.
I think one change they can make. Box till you knock somebody out.
So no by decision.
No by decision. Keep going until somebody falls and can't get up.
That would almost
constitute
a tie, like in college football.
No.
I'm sure the Nevada governing body of fighting would love to sanction that. Play until somebody gets knocked the heck out.
Wouldn't it be beneficial, though, for Mayweather, even if this was true, to say it wasn't? Because then people would be more interested in watching. If they think, well, I'm going to knock him out in one round, I'm not paying $100.
I'd pay $100 to see Mayweather finally knock someone out. What, it's been like 20 years since he's done that?
I mean, if I want, like, I want to see, as I was telling Fish yesterday, best outcome. Each contestant has a punch so hard that it knocks both of them out and they're both on the ground. That's kind of what I want to see.
Rocky 2?
Yeah, it's just a double knockout. That's it.
Well, Ezekiel Elliott's terrible offseason continues. He appealed a speeding ticket that he received back in April, clocked at doing 100 miles an hour in a 70-mile-an-hour zone. He originally pled no contest, waived his right to a jury trial back in June. However, last Friday, he filed an appeal on the ticket. He's also being investigated for an alleged incident in a bar on Sunday night where a man was physically assaulted. He's also still under investigation from the NFL for that domestic violence accusation back in 2016. He's under a microscope.
He is in the spotlight, so he's appealing this. Now, if he were to drive his car 100 miles per hour into a Salvation Army bin, he might win the appeal like he did in the NFL season. And he got fined and then it got overturned because they were like, you know what? We like the Salvation Army.
I don't know. No.
He couldn't be driving 100 miles per hour anywhere and you're not going to appeal? What if he was driving to visit his dying parent in a hospital? Not that I wish his parents would be in a hospital, but you know, maybe he had good reason.
He's one of those players who wishes the NFL was 12 months a year.
Yeah, he's been making jokes, but like Zeke Elliott, he needs to chill. Like, he really needs to stop the speeding tickets, the exposing a woman's thought, domestic violence accusation before he even got into the NFL. It's the list is long, and he's only been in the NFL for one season.
He needs to just stay at home. Stay at home. Don't leave the house. And Le'Veon Bell and the Steelers failed to come to an agreement before the Monday deadline for players under the franchise tag. That means Bell will play this year for $12.12 million. Bell said that while they didn't knock him for his injury history during the negotiations, he says he's worth more than what they're offering him. He didn't say what that was, but he thinks he's worth more. Bell is not sure whether he'll sign the franchise tender and if he'll report to Steelers training camp on July 27th.
Now, this is the same Le'Veon Bell who a couple of years ago, while driving to the facility to board the team plane for a preseason game, he and his running back partner, LeGarrette Blount, got pulled over in the car for smoking some weed. So you're supposed to decide whether you want to pay this guy. Like, I'd be skeptical of paying him, too. If this guy is going to get pulled over, getting high on the way to the team play, like, you're going to have to walk past the coaches. Like, what is going on? Like, if you're the type of person who would have that kind of judgment, I'm going to question giving you $12 million for multiple years. Like, you're going to have to prove to me that you're responsible for a much longer period of time than a couple of years.
I think the Steelers made a great decision here because remember when it blew up about how patient his running style was and how he'd hide behind the offensive line?
Yeah.
And they tried to highlight that in the Patriots game and it was really, really hard to watch. Mm. I'm expecting a down year for Le'Veon Bell because I think we've made too much about, oh, look how patient he is, look how slow he is. I might even pass a Le'Veon Bell if you're a top four fantasy pick.
Ooh. See, I don't know about
that. I'm thinking he's down, down, down. I think too much is made about this running style that to me isn't all that great.
He's ridiculously good. I still like that. That would be why I'd pay him. His decision making, questionable. His running style, I'm with it. Domino's Pizza presents Mountain West Media Days on Sports Radio The Ticket, Tuesday, July 25th, Wednesday, July 26th. Gaze and Beal are live from Las Vegas. Listen to the interviews with all the Mountain West coaches and players from 1 to 6, both days live from the Cosmopolitan Hotel. It's college football time, Tuesday and Wednesday, live from Las Vegas next week on your FM home for Boise State football, Sports Radio 93.1 FM, The Ticket. Up next, quick hits, Fish and I, four topics done before you blink, including Texas Tech football, what they did for Media Day. That was a fantastic idea. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Quick hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
She was wrong again. No Bob. So Chris and Fish doing the quick hits. And first, firing at Fish, why was there a funeral held before the Astros-Mariners game yesterday on the field?
Well, the Houston Astros, under the best record in the American League, decided to have a funeral for the glove of one Carlos Beltran. He has not played in the field since May. He played 77 games, only 9 in the field. Last time he played was May 16th against the Marlins. So, as a joke, the team decided to bury his glove, as they said they would no longer need it.
Now, was there tears? Or was there lots of laughs? Because, you know, funerals, you got tears, you got laughs, and then you got, like, good food.
I don't think there was any good food because it was before the game.
It's frustrating.
I didn't see any tears. I think a lot of laughs.
Okay.
Everyone wore black. It was a funeral game. They even had some guy in a black robe to commemorate the ceremony, and then they lost.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Celtics showing up in all black, except the opposite because they're celebrating the fact that, you know, they're joking on themselves. The Celtics and the Wizards, when they were doing their all black thing, it was just the cheesiest attempt to try to get underneath somebody else's skin.
Number two.
All right, Chris, we talked about Madden yesterday. Today we're talking about NBA 2K. And what does Joel Embiid think his rating should be in NBA 2K18?
Well, I use him in NBA 2K17, and he's pretty effective in that game. I think his rating is like somewhere around in mid-80s, 85. Well, how about instead of me telling you what Joel Embiid thinks his rating should be, how about Joel Embiid tell you what he thinks his rating should be?
I'll be honest, he should be at least 95 because I try to do it myself and like trying to like actually win myself and like literally get to 95. So like there's basically no way to rate me, but I think a 95.
Do you want to know your rating?
Let's do it.
You're an 86.
What? That's bullcrap. I'm not going to cuss. I just got fine, so I'm not going to cuss. But 86, I'm definitely going to bump it up to 95 during the season.
So he's going to bump it up to a 95, which is good news for people who like the 76ers like me. Now, I'm kind of confused with the 86 rating, too, because if he's actually on the court,
yeah,
if he's playing, like, take any health out of it. If he's on the court, like, dude's one of the 6-7 best players in basketball in terms of impact.
That's what he showed
like
last year.
His per 36-minute numbers off the chain. You know, if you want to break it down to individual skill sets, like, you know, you're 7'2", that helps in your rating. The taller you are for a center position, that'll help your rating. He can actually handle the ball for somebody who's that tall. He has a 3-point shot. He has post moves, can finish with either hand. Strength is there. Like, his impact on the game is that of somebody who's in the mid-90s. But, right, there's the durability thing. So I followed up his tweet that durability is what's holding him back. And that's true. I don't know if that's the formula that they use to put him down to an 86, but if it is, that would be the only reason why he's an 86.
So it sounded like they're recording that in a wind tunnel. I'm surprised he didn't, like, suffer an injury in the wind tunnel, Chris Lewis.
Man, he can't even walk in a wind tunnel?
No, not from his
voice. You got to check out the Instagram picture. He can play some basketball right now. He's not, like, on crutches. He's not in a wheelchair. This dude can play.
He was
right
supposed
now.
To be able to play last year, and he played, what, 33 games?
He played 31 games, and they really didn't play him at the end because they didn't need him. And, you know, the draft pick got a little bit better because he wasn't playing at the end of the year. Although the pick swap really made the
draft
pick a
lot better.
Show me
50 games. And then I'll believe.
Yeah, again, I need to see 50 games. It'd be nice to see 60. It'd be nice to see 65. But when he's on the court, he's at a level of a 90.
Topic number three.
What future Hall of Famer is meddling with the first-place Milwaukee Brewers trade plans?
Well, that would be former team owner and baseball commissioner Bud Selig. He's going to be introduced into the Baseball Hall of Fame on July 30th, one day before the trade deadline. And apparently, he likes to still call into the former team and, hey, what are we doing? Who are we trading for? What about the Cubs? Is that trade okay? Bud Selig, stop. You don't own the team. Stop. Get out of here. If I'm him, I'm like, Bud, we're doing all right. You know, just prepare your speech for that ceremony. Stay away from our team.
Just be the pest.
Yeah.
Be annoying. Just want him to can block his number.
He can't block. He's the former commissioner.
Yeah, you can block it. It's easy.
Is that like
hit the block iPhone, hit the block number. You can do
send
it.
Send it right to voicemail.
I'm sure you got a fancy phone system at the Milwaukee Brewers office. You can hide your number or delete somebody on there. Yeah, you could absolutely do it. Delete the former commissioner. Take him out of the Hall of Fame.
No, he
just like I was saying, like, he kept these guys out of the Hall of Fame, like Bonds. He didn't do it.
No.
You could take Bud Selig out with you.
Topic number four.
All right, Chris, what did Texas Tech football come up with for their the Big 12 Media Day? That was a great idea.
All right. You know what happens at Media Day, right? All of them, Mountain West included, American Conference, Big 12. Have a bunch of people in an area asking a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And you're going to get probably some of the same canned responses. It's an exhausting day for, like, you know, the people who are there. It's like, man, you got to talk to players from 11 different teams, 12 different teams. And for the people who are answering the questions, like, you have to basically cycle through, what, like 12 different groups of media for all these individual teams and pretty much answer a lot of the same questions. So what did Texas Tech Football Media Day, what did Texas Tech Football do at Media Day to help break it up? They created a bingo sheet. They have Media Day bingo. So, for example, on the board, of course, you got the free space in the middle. But when third year for you under the head coach, when that comes up, put a check by it. Question about freshmen or newcomers. Question about your dad. Question about culture. Question about scheme. What are some of the team goals this year? These are different spots on the bingo board. I think we should do that for Mountain West Media Days. That would be fun. At least we can feel like we're included, because I'm not in Las Vegas, but I'll be listening to Bob in Caves running it down. Can I play bingo? Can we come up with a bingo board? JP's nodding his head with it. Maybe JP will come up with a bunch of bingo cards, and me at home will be checking it off on the list, or me at the studio. I don't know where I'll be listening, but I'll be listening, and I want my bingo chips.
I feel like the Big 12 is a lot easier to make a bingo board, because you can just say defense for all the questions, and you can cross them all off with one question.
No, I'll play defense there.
Exactly.
Defense won't be even brought up.
Someone will say,
nothing about secondary. There's nothing about linebackers. That doesn't matter. That conference defense doesn't exist.
Somebody's going to be like, hey, why can't you guys play defense? And the coach is like, I don't know. Great question.
Ask all the other coaches, because they have the same problem too. Except we joke, but Boise State kind of got lit up by a Big 12 team in the last game that Boise State played in. So, about that.
And that'll be on the bingo board.
On the Baylor bingo board? Did you beat Boise State?
No, that'll be on the Boise State bingo. How do you guys feel coming off a loss in the bowl game? Put that on there, right next to the free space.
That'll be there. I'll be on the board. Magic Johnson. He lost his mind. That, and we continue with our board of trying to unify the different rule structures within sports. I don't like dividing. I like unifying. That next. We're unifying some sports rules because there's a difference between college and pro, both levels, or both sports, football and basketball. No Bob Beeler today. He's maybe on his way back from Disneyland at this point. He'll be back tomorrow, though, so Fish and Bob share JP in Fish's chair. At least his usual chair. He's not, like, in Fish's chair right now, like, sitting on his lap.
That'd be kind of weird.
That would be hard to host a show with JP sitting on your lap.
You're painting a weird picture here.
I'm just painting an accurate picture is what I'm doing. All right, so I mentioned unifying because Lamar Jackson, I saw the comment that Bobby Petrino had basically saying, we need to implement some things to show off his NFL ability, even though it won't work in college. Okay, he didn't say it to that extent, but he's saying, like, under center and showing some play action traits that they do in the NFL, we're going to put it in just to showcase that Lamar Jackson can do it at the NFL level. So it got me to thinking, why are these sports have so many different rules between college and pro? So we went down the list for football and we determined that the hash marks being 40 feet apart is the best way to do it, the college way, not the NFL way. We're trying to come up with a unified rule structure. Extra points need to be from the 15-yard line, like in the NFL. There needs to be a spot foul for pass interference, not the college way of 15 yards as the max. We need to have 2 feet inbounds on catches, not just one. We need to get both feet in. Clock stopping after our first down. We like that. The NFL doesn't have it. We think at college they have it right, where the clock should stop after the first down, especially in the two-minute drill situation. And speaking of the two-minute, just get rid of the two-minute warning. That's a pro thing that needs to go. College overtime over pro overtime. Fish led the way there, just eventually kind of pulled me to his side. The replay system, the challenge structure that the NFL has, the superior one. Down by contact, we feel like you need to be touchdown. Not this whole, well, if I caught it diving and there's no defense around me, I'm still down anyway. No, you need to be touched down by contact. So that's how we did it.
Well, before we go to basketball, Chris, we got a text from Mike and Boise. One, he said 1 foot is good enough at home plate. It should be good enough on the football field. So he's with you there.
Yeah.
Though he did say you can't argue that one-footed catchers are more exciting, and that's why you're there to see completed passes, and then say you're not there to see touchdowns a la college football overtime. He's got a point. You can't tell me you want to see more touchdowns and then take more touchdowns out in overtime, Chris.
But those aren't earned. Those are earned.
25 yards is very difficult.
No, it's not. When the field's 100 yards, when you automatically get it at the 25, I don't feel like that's earned. I feel like that's fake football. But we've already hammered all that out. We're going to go to basketball now, the differences between college and pro and which one's best. But, the transition between the two is summer league, right? The college guys go into the summer league before they go into the NBA. Magic Johnson's Los Angeles Lakers won summer league. So before we get to this rule thing, I want to get to this Magic Johnson audio because I couldn't believe he said this after his team won the summer league championship.
And it started with these young men tonight winning the summer league, and so the Lakers are back. We're gonna try to make sure we build and grow, and we're gonna have a great year.
Magic Johnson, y'all won the summer league. The Lakers are back. The Lakers are back because they won the summer league. Wait a minute. Hold up. They're summer league team. That's less. There's no correlation. There is zero correlation between summer league success, team success, and regular season team success. It's worse than the Grapefruit League. That's like Magic Johnson saying, the Marlins are back after they had the best record in the Grapefruit League. Nobody says that they're back because what happened in summer league. That's insane. And he runs the team. And he's saying they're back because they won the summer league. Really? Nah, man, you can't say that. Nah, that was silly. I was surprised they even had a trophy presentation. Where are they doing having a trophy presentation? These people who are out here caping for the participation trophies going away, where are they for the summer league trophies? Like, I'm not even a participation trophy hater, and I thought it was excessive to give a trophy to the team that won summer league.
I honestly didn't even know Summer League was a tournament. I just thought teams played like five games each, and they're like, all right, hey, you played five games, we played five. I had no idea that there was any sort of structure in the Summer League. I really hope, though, the Lakers put this banner up. They haven't won in a while. Magic says, boom, put the banner up. It could say, like, the starting point of the next dynasty and just put it up there, Summer League champs.
I mean, the Lakers have accomplished so much. They've won so many championships. They've had so many great players. For them to even say they're back because they won a summer league, if I'm a Lakers fan, I'm like, what happened to our franchise? Like, really? That's awful. Anyway, okay, so summer league's the transition between the two. Now let's talk about the differences between college basketball and pro basketball. Three-point line, 23 feet 9 inches, a three-point line in the NBA, but it does get shorter, 22 feet in the corners. College three-point line, 20 feet, 9 inches. What three-point line yields the better game?
The pro three-point line. Now, I kind of took this as a going forward. I do not want to see the college line implemented in the NBA game. Otherwise, just no one will attempt two-pointers ever. Everyone will look like the Rockets. So for the health of the game we're creating here, you need the pro line. Because if it gets even closer, the mid-range two will be disappeared, and we might as well say every shot's worth three unless you lay it up, and then it's worth two.
Yeah, I'm going with the pro three-point line too, but different reason of the fact that everybody would shoot threes. I think the floor being more open and having more space with the bigger three-point line yields for a more free-flowing product to watch. Like, you see sometimes the college game get a little bit bogged down because the fact that it's easier to help, because if you're position your offense to border the three-point line, which is naturally what a lot of teams do, a lot of players do, you're in better help position for a lot of drives, and it means the middle of the floor is not as open, so it's harder for the better athletes to stand out because it's a more compacted game. The NBA three-point line, I mean, they couldn't even make it a little bit larger, and we would see what happens with the middle of the floor. I think it would open up a lot more, so that's why I'm going with the pro three-point line if we're trying to unify the rules of basketball. How about the shot clock? 30 most recently for college basketball after being 35 for a long period of time. 24 in the NBA.
I like the college shot clock. It lets you set up an actual play as opposed to watch the point guard dribble the ball out for 20 seconds and then drive to the hoop. So it lets more development as opposed to kind of, oh, we have 10 seconds now that we're just past, or 12 seconds now that we're past the half court line. All right, I'm just going to take it to the hoop because I have no time left. So I like 30 because it lets you set the offense up. It's a real game as opposed to, all right, whip it to this one guy you shoot because you got 5 seconds left.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but like in college, at least when it was 35, there was a lot of like, all right, we'll just spend the most of the shot clock dribbling between that half court. Like, you didn't need 35 seconds.
No, you don't need 30.
Because they weren't even going into their offense until there was 15 left. If we're trying to unify, I don't think college basketball players, as a rule, are able to generally execute in 24 seconds.
No.
I don't think they're at that point yet. Maybe in a few more years with the shot clock being at 30, this will get to the point where it's a little bit better. But as of now, I would lean towards you, like if we're trying to unify it. 24 is a fast shot clock. I like it better. But again, if we're unifying it, which means college has to use those rules too, I'm still going to go with 30.
I think scoring would go down to like 60 a game at this point if you put it at 24 in college, because you just see so many bad shots early in the shot clock.
Yeah, but you could say it would speed up the pace so you'd have more possessions, therefore more points.
I don't need 100 possessions and 60 points.
Halves versus quarters. A better flow to it.
Halves.
Halves? Oh, no. This is where you're
involved. No, see, quarters are – it's clunky. It's awkward. They're 12-minute quarters, which is just a weird number to begin with. You got to go halves. The 20-minute halves are great. I think it makes it for a better basketball game, especially in the second half, because it feels like the whole half matters. We're in the NBA, the third quarter doesn't feel like it matters at all. You're going right to the fourth quarter. That's when all the action happens, as opposed to the first half of the second half, the 20 minutes to 10 minutes. It feels like it all matters. It just feels like a more complete game, Chris Lewis.
I think by in the next 3 years, you're going to get rid of the half structure in college basketball, too. I don't even think, the half structure is
going
to last in college basketball very long. Quarters works. Every other, you know, sports we generally do in quarters. Football.
Not 12-minute quarters.
Yeah. My next question was game length, 40 versus 48. So let's discuss them in unison then. I think 40 minutes is a better game length than 48. Like
you're
the
right.
NBA has. So if you have 4 10-minute quarters.
That's even worse. It's just because there's too much stoppage then. Too much, because, you know, quarters are a lot longer than the after 16, the after. No, we should get rid of some of those. I don't need 17 timeouts.
Right now, I have more stoppages in college.
Well, yeah, okay, we need to get rid of some of those, but that's not what the question was. 10-minute quarters, oh, that'd be too weird and too strange. So I like 40 minutes, and then you keep the two 20-minute halves.
Well, we're going to have to go on opposite sides of that one. I don't feel like I'm not going to talk you to my side on this one. You're definitely not.
But we did agree 40-minute games.
40-minute games, absolutely. And if you can make games 2 hours, I like the fact that college basketball games, 2 hours, 10 minutes is kind of a long game for college hoops. The width of the paint, 16 feet in the NBA, 12 feet in college, it does make a subtle difference in the amount of lane that's open. I would probably go with the NBA one on that, but you can talk me into college if you're really passionate about it.
I go with the NBA. If you're making three-point, you can't have a wider three-point line and a smaller paint. That just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it'd be imbalanced. Foul out, 5 or 6?
5. I didn't understand 6. 6 is weird. Why do they get a free extra foul? One, again, we're going with weird numbers, 12. Now we're at 6. You get 5 fouls. You don't get some weird extra free bonus foul.
This is one where you need to keep the most appealing players on the floor. Make it 6 because
they don't even call fouls in the NBA anyway. When's the last time like any star player fouled? When's the last time Durant fouled out? Never? College? High school?
He's been in foul trouble before. Yeah, Steph Curry was in foul trouble entire NBA finals. Not this most recent one, but the one before.
No. Go with 5. Tell the refs don't call as many fouls on the star players. We'll be fine.
Opposite ends again. All right, this one. If you're on the wrong end of this one, I might lose it.
Okay.
I might lose it completely. Jump ball versus possession arrow. College basketball, when they're on the floor scrapping for the basketball, they go to the arrow. In the NBA, they actually jump the ball. Even though the signal in college basketball is the jump ball signal, they still go to the possession arrow.
So I think that means you're leaning towards jump ball.
Absolutely.
No,
What is with the possession arrow? Why is this necessary?
One, there's never any jump balls in the NBA anyway. It feels like they don't even use it. The possession arrow, one, it makes the game more exciting. It's more strategic at the end because it's like, oh, well, you got to trap them, but then they have the possession error, so you've got to get two traps. And two, I don't need to say Isaiah Thomas and Tyler Lyles jumping for, or Euless jumping for a ball at 5'9".
Yeah, that'd be fun, though, if they were against each other. 5'9".
Now, maybe
5'9".
They were once, actually. Now, but if you could say, all right, you have to have your shortest guy do it, good. Jump ball, it's a start of a game thing, and then we don't use it ever again.
Possession arrow can penalize good defense. Just because you don't have the arrow, you don't have a shot at the basketball. This is one.
Get two stops. Get two stops.
Straight up wrong. 208-424-9300. I don't care about all these other ones. He's wrong about the jump ball versus the possession arrow. And we'll end with this one: the shooting two versus the 1-1. Now, you know, if you went to a quarter system, it's harder to have a 1-1 because, you know, at least in women's basketball, when you get to the fifth, it's the double bonus. They got rid of the 1-1 altogether. If you went to quarters, which, you know, college basketball on the men's side might within the next 4 or 5 years, would you be one that has to keep the 1-1 somehow in there?
Yes. You reward good free throw shooting.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like it.
You
I like
can't.
The
1-1. Two is weird because it's like, oh, hey, you know what? You get two free shots. You should be, one, players should be making 80% of their free throws. That's just a whole other discussion entirely, but it's a free throw. It's what it's called. So reward people who can shoot them.
KTIK, proud sponsor of Finals Night, Saturday, July 22nd at the Snake River Stampede at the Ford Idaho Center in Nampa. Tickets on sale now at ictickets.com. Get more information at snakeriverstampede.com. Up next, we're going to talk to Craig Hoffman from 106.7 The Fan in Washington, D.C. about this Kirk Cousins thing. Are the Redskins making a huge mistake by not making him a long-term offer? That next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. One of the NFL storylines going into training camp, at least the instability at quarterback of Washington. Now, we know Kirk Cousins is going to be there this year, but his future could be anybody's guess. Well, Craig Hoffman will have an educated guess. He's a 106.7 The Fan and the Train with the Best podcast in Washington, D.C. Craig, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining.
What's up, Chris? How are you, man?
Hey, doing pretty well. So how unique of a situation is this with Kirk? Now, he's a quarterback who's been performing at an upper echelon level the last couple of years, where his future, year to year, is in limbo.
Yeah, it's wholly unique. It's one of one in NFL history. No quarterback has ever played on two franchise tags, and that's typically because if a quarterback is good enough to be considered a franchise guy, which certainly the level at which Kirk Cousins has produced the last 2 years, he is. He gets signed to a long-term deal. There's only really one other quarterback that's ever produced at this level and then made it to free agency like this, and there was really good reason. And in fact, there was double reason he was led to free agency, and it was Drew Brees. He had torn his shoulder to a point that some teams thought he would never be able to play again. And in fact, the Miami Dolphins brought him in, looked at his shoulder, and decided to sign Dante Culpepper instead. That didn't really work out for them. And then the Chargers, who were letting Brees go, had Phillip Rivers waiting in the wings. So, and in a lot of ways, Drew Brees wasn't Drew Brees yet. That really happened when he got to New Orleans with Sean Payton and took off there. So there really is no precedent for this ever in the history of the league. And you'd think for a quarterback or a franchise like the Redskins, who have been in the quarterback desert forever, basically, you could argue in some ways since Sonny Jurgensen, even though they've won a couple of Super Bowls since then, you would think they would sign up long-term, but alas, here we are.
Now, Craig, at this point, Kirk Cousins, 2015, he lost in a playoff game. Last year, he threw two interceptions in Week 17 to knock them out of the playoffs. Do we know how good he actually is at this point?
I mean, to a point, yeah. I think it's much more of a question of how good he can be, and maybe there's some room for disagreement there. But I think when you're talking about player evaluation in general, like, you have a floor and a ceiling of what the worst he's going to be, the best he's going to be. And as you gather more data, that window shrinks. You realize that somewhere in the middle is the actual reality of what this guy is. And, you know, it's harder to argue that he's all of a sudden going to fall off or he's going to get way, way better. And last year we had a full season of him as a starter, even though he didn't have training camp as the starter. Then all of a sudden, we have now have 2 years, and last year he was the starter all the way through the offseason program, through training camp, and then through the regular season. And both years, he was pretty good. I mean, I'm not here to tell you that he's great. I don't think he's a top 8 guy. I think you can argue in the back end of the top 10 if you're really, really high on him. And then I would probably put him somewhere between 10 and 15, but he's one of the better half of the quarterbacks in the league. And there's not enough quarterbacks to go around to the 32 teams anyway. So he's definitely a guy you can win with. I mean, look, you saw how hot he got at the end, specifically of the 2015 season. He had a really nice run in the middle of last year too, kind of culminating with the Sunday night win over the Packers. And if he gets hot like that in January, you can win a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins. There's no doubt about that. Is it as easy as it would be if you had Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers? No. But you want to know who gets Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers? The Patriots and the Packers. That's it. That's the list.
Greg Hoffman, 106.7 The Fan in Washington, D.C. He joins us here on Idaho Sports Talk talking about Kirk Cousins and his situation. Now, what's the biggest holdup in him not getting a long-term offer or an agreement at this point? And if it were me, it would be the fact that the bosses can't pronounce my name right.
Yeah, that's something that we've had quite a bit of fun with on our station. And we had Kirk exclusively today. And our midday show has had Kirk on for the last 2 years. They asked him about it. And he's like, look, but Kirk takes the high road on everything, but without hesitation just went, I had teachers that called me that. It's been a thing my whole life. It doesn't bother me. That would drive me insane. The best part about Bruce Allen doing it yesterday was he was reading off a sheet of paper where K-I-R-K was in front of him, and he still said Kurt. But anyway, the actual holdup is, unless Kirk is lying, is not that. And what he said today on our station is that it is completely about wanting to see more from the organization. So often the organization wants to see more from the player. But with all the instability that has happened with this franchise, you know, since he's been here, obviously he was drafted behind Robert Griffin, and then he saw what happened to the Shanahans, and he's still close with them. You also have what happened with Scott McLuhan this offseason. So basically the only thing that has been stable over the course of time is that there's been chaos of some kind going on in some circle of the organization. So he wants to see now, post Scott McLuhan, if this organization is going to bring in the talent he thinks is necessary to win, see how they're going to treat some of the other players, see how they're going to run this new front office structure that they have when Bruce Allen is completely back in charge of all decision-making, and everybody knows it. Kind of he was behind the scenes. McLuhan didn't have a whole lot to say, but McLuhan's relationship certainly helped him land a guy like Josh Norman. And so I think Kirk, you know, what he said was money didn't really matter, that it wasn't a fact that they came with an offer that didn't make any financial sense. It's the fact that he wants to see more from the organization, and that's why he didn't really counter-offer. With that said, I would have liked to see what would happen if they had put a real offer in front of him. Could they have persuaded him to sign something if they have, you know, given him more guaranteed than he's basically going to get no matter what? So that I would say there's definitely a financial holdup if there were never terms put on the table that made any sense for him to sign. And then from his side of it, he's curious to see where this organization goes over the next year.
Now, Craig, saying Kirk Cousins, let's say Kirk Cousins leaves, is there any sort of plan B right now with the Redskins about who the backup is, or is it just going to be plug Colt McCoy or plug in a veteran that they can sign next offseason?
Yeah, I mean, depending on who you ask in the organization, there are some that are high on Nate Sudfeld. They're the guy they drafted in the sixth round last year out of Indiana. As an observer of the organization, don't count me amongst that group. And then with Colt, I mean, there is a belief in Colt McCoy. Depending on who you ask, that belief is somewhere between like, oh yeah, we're happy to have him as our backup. And it's like, no, he'd be almost as good as Kirk. I don't think that is fair to Cousins at all. I think while there are some things that McCoy does well in terms of scramble, create, that he might even do better than Cousins, the down in, down out consistency that he would give you compared to what Cousins gives is not even close. So I think if worst case scenario, they would go to McCoy and give him one last chance of starting in the NFL. But I think at that point they'd be looking draft, free agency, something. They would try to, you know, engineer a trade. There isn't anything clear. And you know, they also haven't ruled out using the transition tag or maybe even the franchise tag next year, which is just an obscene amount of money. But they are very set and publicly on saying Kirk is our guy long term, even if we don't have that in writing yet.
If I were him, I would just want to block the whole phrase franchise tag from my phone. Like, I don't even want to ever see that. those two
words
together ever again.
It's the weird thing is Kirk seems really okay with it. He seems all right with the franchise tag. The fact that it's a lot of money, and especially, God, if they give it to him next year, it's $34.5 million. You know, so if he gets that, like, what's he got to complain about?
That's
it's fully guaranteed, and that's the crazy thing. They're probably more likely to use the transition tag next year to guarantee some compensation, and that's $28.5 million. And if that's the case, then he, over the course of his last 3 years, you know, it's 20 last year, 25 or 24 this year. That's 44. And then, well, I don't know, Chris, we don't do math as broadcast majors. They didn't teach us that at our school. So whatever 44 plus 28 is, that's what, like 62, 72 million?
Yeah.
72 million over 3 years, fully guaranteed. You may have only gotten it 1 year at a time, but that's a lot of money that you got fully in your pocket. So the franchise tag, that's kind of the cool part about this from a business side, studying it, is Kirk's kind of flipped the franchise tag on his head. It's not a threat to him. He's like, you're going to give me all that? Sweet. Sign. Where do I sign?
Not bad.
And that completely flips the leverage.
Craig Hoffman, 106.7 The Fan in Washington, D.C. Now, before we let you go, I know you're a hoop head. What do you make about the increased hype with Summer League this year? It was crazy.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I went to Summer League a couple of years ago, and it was a very odd thing even then, where it's like the hype around this is so much greater than the magnitude. I'd never seen anything quite like it. And this year it was a whole new level, you know, selling out Thomas and Mack Center, you know, the Lakers-Celtics games were raucous atmospheres. A lot of Lakers fans come because, you know, Vegas is a pretty short drive to L.A., from L.A. to Vegas. And so it's kind of like the drug, and it's the last little drip before you know it goes away. And so, like, that's what it is for me consuming Summer League. It's like, all right, let's check out these rookies who I've just spent a ton of time studying for the draft. And it's a last little bit of basketball to drip my way and try to get towards training camp. But to see the hype that it had this year, I mean, maybe it was a star-studded rookie class, and that had a lot to do with it. And next year it won't be as much, but that was crazy, man. Like, It I don't know what to make of it, but it's fun, and I like fun. Sports should be fun. It was fun.
Right. I enjoyed watching some more extra basketball. Felt like a bonus. Craig Hoffman,
exactly.
106.7 The Fan in Washington, D.C. We appreciate the time. Be well.
Thanks, man. Always good to talk to you, boys. Be well.
All right. That's Craig Hoffman. The country concert event of the summer is at the Fort Idaho Center Friday night, August 4th. Country superstar Jake Owen, Neil McCoy, Cassidy Pope is seen on The Voice, and Drake White. Get your tickets now at Jackson's Food Stores and ictickets.com. Up next, sports update, including Brett Rypien got another honor. What the honor is next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
This Ticket Sports Update brought to you by the Owyhee Tavern. Make your next dinner occasion in downtown Boise at the newest urban-inspired spot in town, the Owyhee Tavern Steak and Sea at 11th and Main. Well, Boise State quarterback Brett Rypien was named to his third preseason watch list today. It's the Werfel Award watch list that's given to college football's player with the exemplary community service, also academic achievement. Also, Cedric Wilson, who will be a guest on Idaho Sports Talk, by the way, at 4:15 today, was named to his second watch list, named to the Biletnikoff Award. That's given to the best receiver in college football. Maybe we'll ask him how many yards and touchdowns he'll get.
Now, last year, I was aboard the Cedric Wilson bandwagon just because I heard what the coaches were saying about him, and I was like, yo, this dude sounds like he's legit, and I'm going to be on the bandwagon. He's going to be my favorite player before the season even starts. Then in the first game at Louisiana, he went out and showed everybody what the coaches were talking about. Now, my question is, do I need a new favorite player this year, or can I just stick with Cedric Wilson because I was one of the early ones on the bandwagon?
You can hang with Ced.
Okay.
No, yes. I think you need to find a new one. Because obviously you were on the Ced bandwagon, look what you did last year. So now you need to find a new receiver, because this is like Spurbeck. We knew Spurbeck was going to put up numbers. You found Ced, so you're the good luck charm. You need to find another guy who's going to put up 1,100 yards, Chris Lewis. This Boise State season rests on your hands.
Okay, I will figure it out. Let me go to my big film room that's Ron Jaworski-esque in my house, and I'll figure it out after doing my exhaustive amount of research. Now, the only thing that's wrong with Cedric Wilson is how he spells Cedric. He spells it with a K at the end.
He didn't name himself. His parents.
You see, so it just said it should be RIC.
Yeah.
No. This is the right way. That would look weird, Chris Lewis.
No.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
It would not look weird. It would look normal.
No,
like
it wouldn't.
Cedric the Entertainer and Cedric Lewis, the world famous Google executive, even though he's not. I don't think he's executive status yet.
Oh, but, yeah, hyping him up.
He's Google employee. He's one of the best.
The employee of the month?
Yeah, according to me. Every month he's been there.
Las Vegas Golden Knights have yet to play a single game in the NHL, but season ticket sales for the new franchise have gone very well, according to their owner, Bill Foley. He told Forbes we're number 5, 6, or 7 in terms of ticket revenue in the league, and they have more revenue than the Flyers, Penguins, and Boston Bruins. Not combined, just individually. That's pretty good company, especially since the Penguins are coming off back-to-back Stanley Cup champions.
I guess it's a shiny new toy, right? And everybody wants to go to Toys R Us to get it and be amongst the first.
Like the Tickle Me Elmo when it came out?
Yeah,
that
Tickle Me Elmo was a problem. Did you have to buy that for somebody or no?
No.
You didn't?
No, thank goodness.
Yeah, that was a problem. People got into fights.
Oh, yeah.
When you had fake, you had to watch out for the fake ones. I remember I was like, 5 years old or something like that when Tickle Me Elmo was huge. I was real young. But Furbies, do they also fit into that category?
Yes, I believe I know what Furbies are, unfortunately.
Yeah, the Furbies are the little things that talk.
It's like the latest Pokemon Go craze.
Yeah, except Pokemon Go is just an app that's free and you can get it. Like, you had to go out and get the Furbies and go out and get the Tickle Me Elmos, and that's what caused the fights and the scraps is that, like, you got some people in them parking lots, you cut them off, and you're about to have a problem.
We never had that problem back in the 70s with the pet rock.
You just went out to the lake,
exactly.
Got a rock, and
a
brought it back.
Exactly.
And
name it.
Did you, after that, sit by the front step and count the cars that went by? Your life sounded real boring back then.
Whoa.
Nothing to do.
Whoa.
Does that sound boring? Oh, we got a rock.
We named
the rock. We moved the rock across the sidewalk. I now can download an app and be entertained and don't have to play with the rocks.
Let's see, jokes on JP. We might have a rock be the president in 4 years.
Yeah, I guess so. You never know.
The NBA is doing away with their home and road uniform designation starting next season. The home teams will be able to pick which uniform they would like to wear at all home games. The visiting team will then choose a contrasting uniform. This changes in conjunction with Nike coming out with new NBA uniforms in 2017-18.
I have a hot take on this. This is awful. I hate this.
Why?
I hate the NBA trend over the last few years of the home teams wearing dark jerseys. I feel like the home team should always wear the white. The road team should contrast it. Because when I tune on a TV, I need to know who's playing without having to like read the bottom of it. You know, you have to read the team thing at the bottom of the screen. Because you know who's the home team because the court. You know, the court is unique. Like the Oklahoma City Thunder court looks different than the Lakers court. Looks different than the Clippers court. So you can tell where they are based on the court. So you know who the home team is. So they don't need to wear the color. When the road teams wears white, it takes a while to figure out what is the road team because they're in a white jersey. Every team is a white jersey. I can't tell by the court because that's the home team. This is a real big deal. Like, does nobody else feel this passionately about this than me? This is huge. Like, I want to be able to go just immediately as soon as the game flips, be able to tell who's playing.
You're going to tell me you can't tell the difference between LeBron James if he's in a dark jersey or a white jersey?
I mean, not every team is LeBron, and I would have to watch for a couple minutes to see LeBron. Like, every team has white. So if the road team is wearing white, it could be literally any team in the NBA. Nobody else gets this, but y'all looking at me like I have four heads, but this is big.
That's because I think it's backwards. I love when the home team wears. I think the road team should wear white, and the home team should get to wear their colors. That makes way more sense in my mind, and that's honestly how I thought it worked.
See, in the NFL, you can mix and match. I'm at least a little bit more accepting of it because helmets. The helmet is unique.
So we need helmets in the NBA.
So if the NBA players had unique helmets, you don't need to have this strict jersey structure. But, yeah, it's been a trend over the last 10 years where they're switching it up, and I don't like it at all. And now that you just got rid of a home and road jersey, Nike, latest example of them ruining sports.
Wow. I think it's a great change, Chris Lewis.
I don't think it's going to make one bit of difference. I'm going to tune in a game. I wouldn't be able to tell you the difference between the home and road team except for the logo on the middle of the court.
Yeah, logo at the middle of the court. That's why the home team can wear white, because you can tell who it is by the logo at the middle of the court. Right.
I was just going to throw in one more story. Sports Business Journal reporting the naming rights for the field at Dodgers Stadium up for sale. Dodgers want $12 million per year. The naming rights would then be whatever corporation field at Dodger Stadium.
You want to talk about ruining sports? This is ruining sports. It should always be Chavez Ravine, not Lucas Oil Stadium at Dodger Stadium. can't deal with that.
Michael Fisher Field at Dodger Stadium.
If I had $12 million, I would do that, though.
Is that as bad as the Celtics having the GE logo on their jersey for next year? Sponsorship jerseys?
No, that's not as bad as ruining an iconic stadium. What do we eventually?
Well, people say the Celtics jersey is iconic, and now that you're putting the GE logo on the chest?
We're one step away from losing Wrigley Field to be Chicago Pizza at Cub Stadium.
No, I would have a Chicago Pizza at Cub Stadium. That sounds fantastic.
But no, you would have a Chicago Pizza at Wrigley. At Wrigley.
Give me Chicago Pizza. I don't care where it is. Idaho Sports Talk with Gaves and Prater on location this week. Burger and Brew on State Street Thursday. Tailgate Sports Bar and Grill at the entrance to Ann Morrison Park off Capitol on Friday. Both days, the boys are live from 3 to 6. Join them. Good excuse to hit up the bar. I'm next on Idaho Sports Talk. Some of the things we miss, including Fish wants to talk about LeVar Ball. Surprise, surprise. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. All right, doing a little bit of what we missed on Idaho Sports Talk, but don't miss Gaves and Prater. Yes, Prater is back from 3 to 6. This part is sponsored by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, accessories, located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. Of course, Fish in the Bob spot and JP in the Fish spot. I'm in my usual position. Bob, I think, will be back tomorrow. His Disney experience and his San Diego extravaganza will be coming to a close. I mentioned, Fish, that you wanted to talk LeVar Ball.
Yeah,
now, this isn't any different than any other day of the week.
No, I'm sorry.
Because you come into the station, what time? 10:30 every day?
10:30, yeah.
10:30, and the first thing you do is look up, what did LeVar Ball do in the last 24 hours, and how can I fit it into a sports update?
It's actually usually the night before I go to bed, I look it up. I'm like, oh, LeVar Ball did this. That's in the update. I'm a little upset that JP did not have what LeVar Ball had for breakfast and lunch today in the update.
You should start a fake Twitter account. What did LeVar Ball say?
Fake LeVar Ball says.
I'm sure that hasn't been made already.
I feel like there's got to be a million. JP, we're a little late on that train.
Yeah, you're still out in front of the reality show name, right? Ball in the
Family. Ball in the Family. Though he's losing my respect. I've tweeted at him twice. I tweeted him Ball in the Family and try and hook me up with some ZO2s. Nothing.
Call him. You have his house phone number.
That might
be
a little creepy.
What he's eating for breakfast if you call him.
That might be a little creepy. I don't need to be blacklisted.
I mean, doesn't he brag about his breakfasts too?
At this point, he doesn't, but he might.
I think he does. I think he says he makes the best eggs and the best bacon. And my response is, how do you mess up bacon? This is bacon. You can't mess it up. All right, so what's the LeVar Ball story of the day? What do you...
Well, this is not the story of the day, but I have great news for everyone who hates on LeVar Ball.
Okay.
He just made the Summer League the best thing ever. Everyone watched the Summer League, Chris Lewis, because of Lonzo Ball, thanks to LeVar Ball. Have you ever watched the Summer League before, besides the 76ers game?
Yeah, I've watched Summer League.
When Allen Iverson was in the league, did you watch Summer League?
Not when Allen Iverson.
Exactly.
Was in the league,
so when the Sixers were good, you didn't watch Summer League. Lonzo Ball and LeVar Ball have made Summer League something to watch. And so I will say this right now, NBA, if you're listening, give LeVar Ball a job in the PR department. Because he's on the way to save your sport.
Now, I will say this about how LeVar Ball does not impact my Summer League interest. If I didn't go to Jamaica this year, I would have gone to Vegas Summer League with my brother. We had plans to do that. Like before, like we made these plans last year when we were watching Ben Simmons play. Like, we need to do this.
Yeah, 76ers fans are a little... Yeah. See, I almost wanted to go to Vegas to watch Lonzo Ball. And I have no interest in watching the Pelicans because no one on their roster is eligible that's any good.
I mean, it is fun. If you are a college basketball fan and somebody who like has a casual interest in the NBA, like you're watching all of these college basketball guys that you saw make runs in March Madness over the last couple of years. So, like, in a way, it is more for the college basketball fan.
True.
And it's almost the way you marry the two together. I'm trying to come up with an explanation because, like, the I can't say it was all LeVar Ball.
Like, they can't. I had no idea that. I feel like most people, now maybe I'm wrong, didn't even know the Summer League was a tournament. I just thought it was a collection of games. Now, thanks to LeVar Ball, I now know the Lakers somehow won the Summer League on the back of Lonzo Ball despite missing two games. So I'm telling you.
On the back of a guy who didn't play in the championship.
MVP, while though.
Somebody else
MVP.
On his team had 30 points.
MVP.
And was the MVP.
Oh, he probably would have gone for 40. LeVar would have probably been able to sub in if Lonzo was playing. It would have been a blowout.
And if LeVar played, of course, they would have won. Michael Jordan could have been on the other team.
Michael Shaq.
And it wouldn't have made a difference. Jeff Kay is in Idaho Sports Talk with Mike Prater. That's coming up 3-6. Yes, Prater is back, but what else do you got?
Well, we better have something more than Prater, huh? That's not going to make it 3 hours.
I'm trying.
And we can't talk about Fisher's drinking habits or his gambling and the, I guess, the way that he's been influenced by these older people. That's horribly concerning.
I'm a little
concerning.
Bit nervous, too. Like, what is Fish turning into hanging out
a
with
winner.
These golf people?
A winner.
I mean, what? You win one thing in this dude because you can't contain him. I can't wait for him to get slapped down, but I'm going to be on his side because I made fun of him so much for picking Brooks Koepka and he ended up winning. So I look silly right now.
That's fine. You could look worse if you had an afro.
Oh, yeah, of course, because you can't be hired anywhere if you have an afro, even though Ryan Fitzpatrick could have a beard the size of Santa Claus times two and have hair that looked like a homeless dude, and he could still get work. I mean, come on, man.
Michael Vick, the image consultant, though.
Come
we
got to
get into that
Stop
some.
This.
But we'll also be talking to Scott Ludwig. We're going to get an update on the baseball stadium downtown. He's the city councilman that's really driving the issue. He'll bring us up to date with the land acquisition and just how this is lining up to get a multi-sport stadium into downtown Boise. We'll get that update in just about 18 minutes from now. And 4:15, Cedric Wilson will come aboard, getting recognized by a lot of publications now. And we'll probably be getting some recognition next week in Las Vegas, the Mountain West Media Summit for football. Mm-hmm. And we'll be talking about the West Division teams because a week from today, the Bob will be at the Cosmopolitan Hotel with myself talking football from 1-6.
When's the last time Bob spent a week at home? He's San Diego, New York, and now he's going to Vegas. When's the last time this dude spent 7 days in a row at his crib?
Let's face it. He's an international guy. He's a jet setter. He's got an agenda, and he's got a lot of travel receipts, I'm sure. So we'll look forward to talking to him tomorrow.
All right, looking forward to it. Idaho Sports Talk from 3-6. Now, I believe tomorrow, if nothing's changed from the schedule that I was sent by Mr. Bob Beeler before he left, I believe we have a Brett Rippon on tomorrow?
I believe that is correct.
All right, cool.
Revealing their home run team.
So let's do
for
that.
The charity. And speaking of home runs, Chris, round three of the Fish Softball Extravaganza goes into action tonight. Took a 2-week break, and now I'm back, and I'm feeling a home run tonight. I'm guaranteeing a home run tonight.
You and LeVar Ball have now just merged personalities.
Guaranteeing it. I'll make sure I get somebody to record every one of my at-bats, and just I'll launch it deep.
How many home runs are typically hit in this league? Have you ever been in a game where a home run's been hit?
Yeah, there's usually about two home runs hit a game.
All right, so it's possible.
Yeah,
you're gonna get
guarantee, and it's going to be I'm going to bat flip past third base.
Seal Puig, LeVar Ball, Michael Fisher, same dude. No difference. All right, Bob back tomorrow. And yes, Brett Rippon will join us tomorrow as well. With that softball reveal. The home run derby participants. Kays and Prater next. 3-6. Idaho Sports Talk, Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.